Three, two, X minus one, fire.
This is Hour 25, the program of science fact, science fantasy, and science fiction. Your hosts are Mike Odell, John Henry Thong, and Terry Odell. For the next 2 hours for news, interviews, readings.
It's a masterpiece, Mike.
You think so, huh?
It is. It really is. It's a flawed masterpiece, but it's a masterpiece.
Are we talking about the same thing? I had in mind Omni. What were you thinking of?
Well, I've got Omni, too. It's sort of like Popular Science and, Scientific American and Rolling Stone got together to put out Scientific American.
Right. It's got a story by Ted Sturgeon, a new story. It's got a story by Asimov.
It's the turned on people putting out a science magazine.
And the art is very nice. I like
it. It's
the
unpretentious. The graphics, the art, the photography is very pretentious and beautiful.
Yeah.
But the text is very unpretentious. A delightful magazine.
Yeah.
Very expensive, and I think it's
$2.
Worth it. Yeah.
$2.
That's not what I was talking about.
What were you talking about?
It's a masterpiece.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about The Wicker Man.
That's right. It's a film that'll be out in a few months, we hope. And I saw the final assembled version, which is back to the two-hour length. And as I say, it's flawed because that the Wicker Man himself, itself, that vast 20, 30, 40-foot construction is just so powerful as an image that every reviewer, everybody, the ads, everybody that goes to see the movie is going to be concentrating on it. And it's really not the point of the movie. You know, it's just too strong a symbol for the movie. Because the movie itself is, I say, a masterpiece, a flawed masterpiece. And so the decisions that were made by the man who put it together, who found the missing parts here and there around the world and put it back together, were very good decisions. Every one of them, he would mention what the thing was like before and that he had taken something out. And they're very good because I certainly agreed with them. I predicted every one of the changes he made because they were so obviously necessary. And the film, the music to that film is in itself, you know, worthy of somebody's book. And the rest of it is just something else. It's not a horror picture at all. In fact, the ultimate act of sacrifice, which is unlikely you will ever hear of the movie without somebody telling you what it is, but there's a death at the end. That is not the point of the picture. And it's a shame, in fact, that it has to be sort of a horror movie, although they're trying very carefully to find out some way of advertising it so that it isn't advertised as a horror movie and paired with the monster, the ooze from outer space, because this it is not. It's a story dealing with a remnant of pre-Christian Europe still to be found in an island off Scotland, and what happens when the crops fail one year, and how they need to make sure they'll be okay next year. And it's full of things, of images and music, sounds, that you can't get out of your head. It's a genuine original. There aren't any movies like it. There will never be another movie like it, probably. Really a superb picture.
And it will be in release. We'll probably talk about it a little bit tonight with our guest Robert Block, and we will definitely talk about it next week when Bill Warren and Don Gluterin will be discussing horror movies, and I guess, however falsely, it does fit into that category.
Remember, we mentioned when he was guest last time, Warren, that he mentioned that Motion Picture Society, and I joined it, and that's how I got to see The Wicker Man.
Very good.
Yeah.
Got a couple of reviews to do. One is of Battlestar Galactica that will be lighting up the tube Sunday night. And this review is written by Mel Gilden. Now, Mel is a science fiction writer. You may have read his stories. You probably heard him for a while on the Janus Company. Well, he sent me a written review. And by way of introduction, he says, he mentions Damon Knight's In Search of Wonder, where Damon gives the three basic rules for bad science fiction movies. Now, this is by way of introduction. The rules are, one, you can't beat the old malarkey. Two, nobody but kids go to see these things. Three, science is all double talk anyway, so what the hell? Galactica follows these three rules pretty well, but expensively. Now, bear that in mind when we hear the rest of the review. Science fiction has never done well on television. Even the now legendary Star Trek never pulled the ratings its large fandom and syndicated success might indicate it deserved. But given the success of current science fiction movies like Star Wars and Close Encounters, Battlestar Galactica has the chance to give TV science fiction the popularity it has sought for so long. Battlestar Galactica is a quick-paced, good-looking production. The characters, while lacking depth, still are properly heroic and have a sense of humor about themselves and their situations. The special effects are competent, certainly more impressive than anything yet seen on television, but in this post-Star Wars world, one must be careful how he uses the word spectacular. The special effects were designed and executed by John Dykstra, the man who had the same job in Star Wars. By no surprise, then, that things look familiar. Those with sharp eyes can see certain expensive scenes used more than once.
You know, may I interrupt you?
Please do.
I've heard that several times, and it's rankled every time I've heard it. Why is it necessarily true that it looks the same because the same man did it? He's a professional, and one of the marks of a person who can do this kind of special effects is that he can do anything you ask for, and he doesn't repeat himself over and over again. You know, if Dykstra is good, then the only reason this looks like Star Wars is because they told him to make it like Star Wars.
There is a lot of truth to that, I understand, for reasons which were at the heart of a suit.
And in fact, if we could prove definitely that that happened, we would probably be in court with the others.
Anyway, back to Battlestar Galactica. The story concerns the 12 colonies of humanity, named after the 12 signs of the zodiac, who at last are signing a peace treaty with their longtime enemies, the Cylons. The Cylons betray the humans and wipe out all of them except those aboard the Battlestar Galactica, commanded by Lorne Greene as Commander Adama and a few survivors on the human planets.
Oh boy, explosions.
Not able to return home, the only hope for survival of the human race is to seek out a perhaps mythical 13th colony of humanity on the equally uncertain planet Earth. The uncertain planet. I like that line. Anyway.
It's a good title.
The story is simple, but the dialogue, regrettably, is not. Characters have a tendency to speak as if from pedestals. Oh, more high school pageants. There is no reason for people in the future to speak in such a stilted, declamatory way. Though the high technology shown would dictate the ability to destroy a planet all at once, the Cylons blow up the human planets a piece at a time. It's exciting to watch, but it doesn't make much sense. All this, plus inconsistent use of made-up time and distance units, will generate confusion and dissatisfaction among viewers looking for something more than a light show. It would have cost Universal nothing in money or rating points to clean up their act. Why they did not is anybody's guess. Even so, there are some clever inventions here. A lady of pleasure is called a socialator, and things are not to be believed are and things not to be believed are a bunch of fungal carb. One of the odd assortment of ships carrying survivals to Earth appears to be made of railroad boxcars, and it bears this legend, Colonial Movers, we move anywhere. Viewers with sensitive social sensibilities will find a lot to dislike here. The astrological colonies have some of the same prejudices we're trying to get rid of. While women are placed in positions of some importance, none of them are making command decisions, and not one of them is a fighter pilot. Also, the second in command of Galactica, a black man, seems to have little to do but play number one son to Lorne Greene. We've come away from the put wings in a cigar shape and call it a spaceship school of thought, but stories remain unsophisticated and small things still rankle. As it stands, Battlestar Galactica is an entertaining bit of live-action comic book drama. If it succeeds as the ratings blockbuster that ABC hopes it will be in spite of its flaws. That's by Mel Gilden, who gave us a review of Battlestar Galactica. which is on the tube Sunday night on ABC.
So put something else on the radio, turn your TV sound down, and watch it.
Well, there's going to be a lot on television that's really mean. ABC is going up against a Disney spectacular, which includes the first television complete showing of Dumbo. And on CBS, you can watch the Emmys. So there is a rumor that the Emmys were slotted by CBS directly against Battlestar, but it turns out they're going to be on about 2 hours earlier. An hour earlier.
That's creative programming decisions. Network variety.
CBS, you know.
And if they ever get to the idea that they can combine in restraint of trade and just pass out the audience one-third for each network, we might get some better programming.
I don't think so. Besides, there's only three networks, but there's also public broadcasting. There are the independents. You can't parse them up quite that way. However, Battlestar Galactica, by the way, Mel saw that at a screening at UCLA, and of course it's been in release in Canada. This is the three-hour version he's talking about, and then I'm going to have some two-hour
version. The two-hour version was the one that was in the theaters.
Yes, it was. Okay. 3 hours. That would be a long time.
With some things added, I understand. Not quite the same material.
Right, so this is probably that one then, padded with commercials.
Oh, by the way, Kubrick has diddled with 2001. It's due for a new release.
Oh, really?
And Kubrick has been tinkering with it. It'll probably be a far stronger picture this time around. In fact, a lot of people are doing that now, and the directors and others involved with motion pictures that think that what they're putting out is a work of art are usually rather disappointed when the sharks in the front office change their movie around for box office boffo bleh at the time of release. And when it gets to be a success in spite of this tinkering from people who know nothing about movies, sometimes the original artist gets a chance to put it back into shape again for its re-release. Of course, in Kubrick's case, he had full control from the beginning on 2001.
Do you know what he's going to be doing with it this time?
I don't know, I understand that he's changing the ending some, and it certainly needs some changes.
That's going to be interesting.
I don't mean that the point of it... You know, somebody was... Who was it? Bill Warren, maybe, on the show, but he was mentioning the fact that 2001 in its original release was supposed to have an R rating.
Yeah, he did mention that.
Something to do with a little bit more in that last scene in the bedroom that we didn't get to see. That might have been interesting.
Maybe on the re-release. Yeah. Okay, we have a very good program tonight. Robert Block is going to be our guest, and we'll be talking with him. And he corresponded, he's done it all. He's corresponded with H.P. Lovecraft, very large and fan activity, both in the Middle West and here in Los Angeles. And, of course, a superb writer. And despite what Bert said in the introduction to the program tonight, think of it not so much as a mental block, but as a writer block. Okay?
And just one before we get to things, a couple more shots of miscellaneous material from Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings has surfaced. And it's the damnedest stuff you ever saw in your life. I'll tell you, that's going to be some animated movie. As I was saying last week, it may offend us as fans of Tolkien, but I kind of doubt if it's going to offend anybody who's interested in superb new ways of doing animated films. It promises to be something extra special. Of course, I'm trying very hard to be good to Bakshi, but... because I was rather hard on him at first, but nevertheless, I really have found some of this stuff to be exceptionally impressive, some of these pictures that come out of it. It's going to be something worth seeing. Even if his Tolkien view of things isn't quite what we might like as fans of Tolkien.
This week, I was trapped in front of the television set for an hour, and... I made up my mind I was not going to watch that SF sitcom called Mork and Mindy.
No, you did?
Well, I didn't want to watch it. I had no plan on watching it. The thing came on, and I was doing some writing, and my eye was, my ear was snagged by a couple of lines of dialogue. So and I got up and I walked into the bedroom where I keep the television set, and I looked at it for a while, and I found myself sitting down and watching it. The show is terrible, but the guy who plays the alien, Mork, is very funny. He is very good. He is very bright, and I wouldn't be surprised if the show's a hit for the wrong reasons.
And by the way, don't miss the paper chase. It'll probably last one or two more programs, and that's it.
Yeah,
one of the good shows.
Yet, but I'm going to catch it Saturday night. John Houseman, who was of course in the film. Okay, are we ready to do the calendar and introduce our guests? Alrighty, Terry, why don't you give us a preview of what's going to be happening calendar-wise?
Wow.
Well, wise-wise, an autograph party for Dr. Gregory Benford, and his new book, Stars and Shroud, will be on Saturday beginning at 2 in Garden Grove at Bob's Comics, which is changing its names to Warriors, Wizards, and Robots, and is holding a contest for a new logo. The address in Garden Grove is 10292 Westminster Boulevard, and the phone number is area code 714-638-9101. The animation and special effects film series will continue with a new program every other day, now through November at the Sherman Theater. For more information, call 784-9911. The Griffith Planetarium presents The Great Moon Hoax on various astronomical hoaxes and myths, and the Santa Barbara Museum of Natural History Planetarium presents Night Wings on Sundays in September. Mensa presents Petronio Latrios, speaking in the thoughts of Buckminster Fuller versus Norbert Wiener, Saturday night at 8 at the Pasadena branch of the Glendale Federal Savings, 722 East Colorado Boulevard. For more information, call 799-5555. UCLA Extension will offer Alternate Realities, the Worlds of Science Fiction. Exploring the achievements of science fiction and its new directions, the readings will include H.G. Wells, Ray Bradbury, Anthony Burgess, Philip K. Dick, Robert Silverberg, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Stanislaw Lem. And the instructor is Dr. Robert Hunt. Classes begin on Tuesday. For information, call UCLA Extension at 825-2401. USC is offering a class in the Anthropology Department on Ancient Civilizations, Myth, and Reality. Among the guest lecturers is Dr. Edwin Krupp speaking in Ancient Astronomies. Begins on Tuesday night. For more information, call USC at 741-2410. Vincent Price will give two performances of his one-man show on Oscar Wilde, Diversions and Delights, September 24th at USC's Bovard Auditorium. For information, call USC at 741-7111. The Tolkien Fellowships will be holding Bilbo and Frodo's birthday picnic, with a mushroom roll race, Tolkien trivia quiz, gift exchange, and costume contest on Saturday, September 23rd from noon to 4 in North Hollywood Park. For information, call 791-1432. The 8th Annual Fantasy Fair will be next weekend, Friday through Sunday, at the Pasadena Hilton Hotel. The guest of honor is Robert Block, and guests include Fritz Leiber, Marion Zimmer Bradley, Ellen Dean Foster, A.E. Van Vogt, Catherine Kurtz, Randall Garrett, C.L. Moore, Bob Clampett of Beanie and Cecil, Galaxy editor H.L. Gold, editor Donald Wolheim, Don Glute, artist Moore Scott Dolans, Don Rico, George Clayton Johnson, Steve Golden and Kathleen Sky, Beecho and John Trimble, Nina Barrow and Space Patrol episodes, actors Eric Lokai Green, John Eger and Ann Robinson, Planet of the Apes makeup man John Chambers, and many more. The Fantasy Fair programming begins Friday afternoon at 4, and speakers, slideshows, and panels will continue through Friday at midnight. Next Saturday, the program begins at 9:30 a.m. The awards luncheon is Saturday afternoon with also Robert Black's Roast, and the slideshow, the Lord of the Rings film, will be shown at 7, followed by the costume contest. And next Sunday, the speakers will continue from 10 a.m. to 6. Fantasy Fair is next weekend at the Pasadena Hilton, 150 South Ross Robles. PolyCon is October 6th through 8th at Cal Poly Pomona. OctaCon 2 is October 14th and 15th in Santa Rosa, California. And LostCon is November 3rd through 5th at the Pasadena Huntington Sheraton. Steve and Vera Kilston review the news and science and the Science Connection Sunday at 6:30 on KPFK. The Big Broadcast presents Old Radio Wednesday from 2 to 3:30 and Wednesday night from 11 to midnight. The Janus Company presents new radio drama Thursday night at 11:30. Some Things Happening has a wide variety of programming, including old radio, Monday through Thursday nights from midnight to 6 a.m., with night reading horror stories every other Tuesday at 2 a.m. on the graveyard shift. Tell your friends about Hour 25. Next week we'll have Bill Warren and Don Glute. And if you have an item for the science fiction calendar, send it in early so you can we can read it on the Friday before it happens, or even earlier. Address it to Hour 25, Post Office Box 8639, Universal City, California, and the zip code 91608. And that's the science fiction calendar for this week.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guests tonight, Mr. Robert Block and Walt Dougherty. And you heard Terry mention on the calendar the Fantasy Fair is coming next weekend, September 22nd, 3rd, and 4th at the Pasadena Hilton. And as has been said, Bob Block is the guest of honor. And to quote from Lester Del Rey's introduction to The Best of Robert Block, "Robert Block, fantasy and suspense writer, more than science fiction author, is one of the favorite people of science fiction fans, or at least one of the many reasons for his esteem will be obvious. There are lots of other reasons. He's one of the few ever to be honored more than once as guest of honor at a World Science Fiction Convention. The first time was in 1948, and the second, 25 years later, in 1973. Robert Block is probably best known to you, as the man who brought, and I use the phrase advisedly, Norman Blake and Jack the Ripper into the hearts of America. But,
if it only didn't take you so long to write these, Michael.
But I want to ask Bob Block a question I've been waiting to ask you since the last time you were on the show 4 years ago. What frightens you?
Audiences.
Oh, now, I find that hard to believe.
No, I really think so. I think I got into this whole thing because as a child I was a little bit introverted, and I'd been pushed ahead in school about 5 semesters. So I was sort of a miniature figure amongst my tall contemporaries, and I wasn't as good at basketball or other games, and I was well insulated against any kind of harm, but I felt a little bit insecure. And I suddenly discovered, when I got up on a platform, that I was safe, because there was a separation between me and the audience. And later on I discovered there was a still greater separation if I cowered behind a typewriter, and my audience was many, many miles removed.
So I like radio.
Radio is very good, too, because I don't have to sit in one of those makeup chairs for half an hour with an embalmer working on me.
I read in Harry Warner's book, All Our Yesterdays, sort of one of the histories of fandom, that one of the things that got you interested in writing horror and fantasy was being offered by your aunt, if I remember this correctly, at a Milwaukee train station, your choice of any magazine in the stand, and you chose Weird Tales, which happened to have a story in it by Howard Phillips Lovecraft. Is that right?
That's quite correct. And the story was Pickman's Model. And I really was turned on by that.
And that was at 10.
That was at the age of 10.
And 2 years before that, again according to Mr. Warner, you had seen Lon Chaney in The Phantom of the Opera.
That's also correct.
And it scared the daylights out of
me. That not only turned me on, but it turned on my bedroom light for 2 years every time I went to sleep.
So you've been reciprocating by scaring the hell out of the American public ever since then, huh?
I would say probably so. Attack is the best defense.
Which do you prefer to write? Horror, fantasy, science fiction? What?
I think I don't categorize my preferences in terms of a genre. If a particular idea hits me that I want to write, I decide where it fits and write accordingly. But I don't say to myself, I prefer to write fantasy over mystery or mystery over science fiction. It all depends where I think it's appropriate to use this type of story. But it's the idea that always fascinates me.
Do ideas come easily to you?
Yes, they do. I'm afraid so. But the time to execute them doesn't come quite that easily. Generally too much to do.
You are a busy person, no question about it. We're going to talk about that. But you're going to take time out to face your fears and conquer them, since you'll be guest of honor at the Pasadena Fantasy Fair this coming weekend, starting a week from tonight. And here to talk about that is Walt Dougherty, who's going to be, Walt, the MC? Is that...
I handle all the programs and introduce all the guests for their programs and try to keep the thing halfway on schedule.
How about that? Now, conventions never run on schedule, right? They're sort of like KPFK. They always run late for... I don't know if there are better reasons or not, but is it tough to program a convention?
Yes, if you've never done it before, but after about 40 years of doing it, it has worked into where that it is fairly simple for me, because I think one of the problems that's taken up by many MCs, and it becomes very greatly a problem with them, which we were just discussing earlier, Bob, is that an MC is too conscious of himself and gets too interested in what the speakers are saying and forgets that the audience is out there, like on a panel, not watching his moderation, not getting together with these people. The other thing is, very few conventions, other than those that I handle, have an MC for the program. If that is their job from beginning to end. They just say, Mike, would you handle this panel? And Bob, would you handle this panel? And Walt, would you handle this panel? Instead of somebody who's in charge. Now, this doesn't mean that he has to MC all the way through. If he has a good man, he will introduce him as a moderator for a panel and let him handle it. But there is no convention that I recall. Bob, your memory would be going along with mine. We've been to a lot of conventions, but I don't recall any conventions other than those that I've handled out here where they have a man that is his job for the whole program is to MC it.
Well, you know the reason for that, Walt. That's because you haven't been cloned yet.
You must know that Bob is going to clone around on something like this.
I had hoped so.
It's a real pleasure to do it. It's marvelous for me emceeing in the field because, like here at the Fantasy Fair, in most cases it's a chance to renew acquaintances with people who are very busy. We get a chance to visit a little bit before the program goes on. And also, if you come up and you're a brand new writer that I haven't heard of and I'm to introduce you on a program, it forces me to do a little research on you and find out about it, and it gets me acquainted with you. So therefore, you get more and more acquaintances of people that you know, especially when they know that you're there to handle them and present them in the best manner that will be honoring to them.
Who are some of the people who are going to be at Fantasy Fair at the Pasadena Hilton this weekend?
Well, we've got quite a list. Many of these will just be there. There's a lot that will be on programs. They will all be introduced at the banquet. Most of them will be there. John Agar, he's been around a few at the conventions, and for those who are not familiar, he's the gentleman that's the motion picture star, such pictures as Tarantula, Journey to the Seventh Planet, the Rocket Man, and he's done a lot of TV. I think one of the latest things that he did was the mayor of New York in the De Laurentiis, excuse the expression, King Kong. Bob Clampett will be there. It's hard to find a more interesting man to listen to. He is, after all of these years being with Warner Brothers and Bugs Bunny, and of course the man behind Beanie and Cecil, the enthusiasm that he goes into with any subject, he just gathers the audience with him. Alan Dean Foster. Name might be too familiar to a lot of people, but it's getting far more familiar because...
Oh, now that he's written the second Star Wars book, I have a feeling people know him.
Right, and also he's done The Splinter in Mind's Eye, which
is the
novelized sequence to Star Wars.
That's the one, yes.
And
beautiful title. Great title.
And also just an individual story. One that I like very much was Ice Rigger. Very well done. And George Clayton Johnson... Logan's Run, co-writer of that with Bill Nolan. He's done lots of Star Treks, and he wrote on Ocean's 11. He will be there.
Twilight Zones, a number of those.
And, of course, a treat that's getting very rare down here in Los Angeles because he's now up in the San Francisco area, and we get him down here maybe about once every 2 years. Very marvelous writer of the macabre, the outre, you name it, Fritz Leiber.
Mr. Leiber will be the guest of honor at the next World Science Fiction Convention in England next year.
there are few people that fall into the category. You would say that Charles Lawton, Orson Welles would be two, and put Fritz Leiber in this group. These are three people because of their presentation and a large part their voice can stand up there for 2 hours and do nothing but read mother nursery rhymes, and you will be glued to your seat without a sound, listening to every word. And Fritz's voice comes from way down in the bottom of the stomach, and you're just entranced with his voice. And of course, we'll have Catherine Moore there.
C.L. Moore.
C.L. Moore. And you know, those that are, remember the Northwest Smith stories, and Jirel of Jory, and fantastic writer. And it goes without saying, Chamblot, when you speak of fantasy, and list any one of a half a dozen stories, you must list Chamblot in it. We have a fairly newcomer to the convention field appearing, Anne Robinson. Anne Robinson's a star of War of the Worlds and has done TV's Rocky Jones Space Ranger series and so forth. Very charming lady. And
very nice lady. Very nice, her on the program.
Very nice back. Person
nice
to be
lady,
there.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll just throw in one more. And what convention can really be fine out here without A.E. Van Vogt? I think we could probably call him the Dean of Science Fiction Writers.
If not the Alan Dean Foster of Science Fiction Writers.
So that gives you a good idea. And let's say that I have mentioned approximately one-third.
About a third, okay. And since probably people will be interested in attending this, where can they call for information and rates and tickets and banquet things and like that?
Fine. It's a little late to write because it does take place next weekend, but for anybody who would like to get more information on it, if you will call Bill Crawford, and Bill Crawford's number in the 213 area is 337-